begins now. We got a special guest who's going to call in coming up next segment to talk some Badgers.
Badgers.
It's nice that his schedule opened up a little bit now for him to be able to join us.
Yeah. It's great. I look forward to his call. Two things before that, though, that are Packers related. One, I mentioned this earlier. I'm curious, Tausch. Go back in your memory banks to 2007. You go to Detroit. You beat the Lions on the road on Thanksgiving. And then instead of having the mini bye, you go right into prep for the Cowboys, who had also obviously played on Thanksgiving. Thursday to Thursday, you go down there. We all remember the moment Aaron Rodgers goes in. Some measure of magic happens. They still lose. But suddenly we're looking at Aaron Rodgers going, oh, the kid can play a little bit, at least for those outside that had not seen him in practice, etc. The other time, so that was a memorable moment. The other time in modern history that the Packers have gone Thursday to Thursday was in 2015, after you'd retired, before we started this show. They play on Thanksgiving in Detroit. Or no, they play at home on Thanksgiving against the Bears. Then they go to Detroit the following Thursday. You remember what happened in that Thursday game?
No.
The Hail Mary, Rodgers to Rodgers, for the touchdown at the end of that game. Yeah, so there's been some memorable moments in these second Thursday games. But I'm curious if you remember what a pain in the tuchus this is, because Matt LaFleur was irritable yesterday. It was Sunday. He didn't know what day it was. It's weird that the Vikings game was on. Then we had to inform him that Kyler Murray had thrown an interception, so the Vikings were going to win. He replied, do you remember how big of a challenge this is? Because one of the benefits that you normally have after playing on Thursday is, okay, I've got a weekend of myself. I get to recuperate, get feeling better, get my body back after two games in 5 days. That's not the case this week. Was that difficult for you, and is it difficult for these guys?
No, I mean, is it difficult? I think your body and mind understand what you're up against. It's not as if this is some shock. The schedule comes out in May.
Sure.
And you plan, and you know, Lord knows coaches and everybody over there plans and preps for everything. So does it kind of stink? Yeah. But you see the end of the you kind of see the end of the light here, though, coming. And you realize it. There's no advantage or disadvantage because both teams played at home. Now Green Bay's got to go up to Detroit. The thing that sucks is that 3 or 4 day rest. You have 3 or 4 days from Sunday to Thursday. Mm-hmm. Now you're back on a normal week, even though it's not normal. But in football terms, you play in that game. You have the next day. You watch film. You get your day off. And then Sunday is a Wednesday. Monday is a Thursday. Mm-hmm. Tuesday is a Friday. Wednesday is a Saturday. And you go play. So it's not ideal. But they know this coming in. And your body will kind of go with where your mind is at. And your mind is, all right, we got another game. Now it's not a quick turnaround. It's a full week. But let's push and fight through this, and then we get that mini bye. So I can understand LaFleur being cranky. It's the holidays. He probably would like to be sipping eggnog with his family, sitting there by the fire, but that's not the line of work you signed up for. Everybody knows it. And the fact that this game is of such utmost importance to what you're trying to do, that overshadows all this other stuff. If you were 4-9 and you're playing the Cleveland Browns at Lake Erie Stadium, you're probably going to be a lot more like, ugh, this sucks. But you're going up to Michigan. You're going to go play the Detroit Lions, who are the belle of the ball. Oh, everybody loves the Detroit Lions.
Some might say.
So the whole deal, like, the motivation's going to be there. Everything's there. Deal with it, and then you move on. I think this is a big old nothing burger.
Okay. All right. What about this? Is this a nothing burger? Over the weekend, or whatever it was, over the end of the week, or I guess it was Saturday, Friday, whatever day it was, Jahmyr Gibbs and one of his teammates are in a meeting room and taking pictures, and suddenly they're on social media. Is all kinds of sensitive information, code words, etc., etc., from the Lions offense. And again, I'm not here to tell you how to or to not run an organization, but there's no doubt that the last thing that a coach ever wants to be finding out something from is the beat writers crew. And Dan Campbell is informed of this incident by one of the Lions beat writers. Here is how Dan Campbell at least sounds taken by surprise by this information.
Gibbs, he had a social media post where, you know, there was a bunch of plays or partial calls on the whiteboard behind him. Is that something where you need to just remind a player to, you know, be smart about what they're posting on social media? Is there anything, you know,
who's that?
I believe Gibbs posted a photo of Jefferson with a bunch of, you know, lingo on the whiteboard in the running back room behind him.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh. I did not know that. Okay. Yeah, I need to check on that then. I did not know that. Yeah, I'd rather our stuff not be out there. Thanks.
And he is giving a look to his PR director that would indicate he's not pleased that he was not aware of this beforehand. Now, our buddy Rob Domofsky, who joins us once a week, there is apparently now, and I think this is, to use his word, Rob's word, cockamamie information, but now there's a theory that this was all a ruse to try and confuse the Packers. There is no way that the Lions are playing four-dimensional chess here, right? This was a boneheaded mistake that the coach wasn't aware of. And as David Bakhtiari pointed out on social media, now they have to change some of their words that they use at the line of scrimmage so the Packers don't know them, right? What do you make of this? Is this a nothing burger like the Thursday-to-Thursday schedule?
No, this is a big old juicy burger, and it does put more work into the Packers. Now they have to go through and look at that and say, okay, and you could subterfuge it because now you're looking at it, and it's the Lions aren't going to just keep this stuff the same.
Uh-huh.
But from a player standpoint, the last thing guys want to do, especially at this point in the season, you're going to freshen up your signals because everybody's got a Connor Stallions. Everybody is looking for every edge they can get.
Sure.
But you just gave them the Green Bay Packers staff the book on protection adjustments and all. And we as offensive linemen, I don't want to have to just wait, we made a Ringo call. All right, well, that means we're moving. All right, the linebacker, this is our guy. We're sliding here, and that puts the back here. Now, all of a sudden, what, are we going to go Oppo? Well, then all of a sudden, the back,
McCartney,
well, I heard
call.
Ringo. But, yeah, but Ringo means lingo. So what means what? The thing you don't want to do is to confuse yourself by trying to out-confuse your opponent.
Okay.
And right now, I think it's probably The Lions are frustrated because they definitely will have to tinker. But I think at this point in the season, you might be tinkering more tinker than you need to tinker. And the Packers will probably look at it and say, oh, boy, well, this. But at least now you'll hear something. And could it be that's a complete psyop? Where, well, I heard this and this is here. I don't know. And the bottom line, it's just like when you have a guy that was with you and you picked him up on a practice squad.
Mm.
Will they be able to give you some info? Yes. Is it all going to work? No. Does it balance itself out? Yes. It's not as if it's you're stealing signs and you know, well, this is a run play to the right. And if it is, then all of a sudden that Jahmyr Gibbs and how that played out is going to be viewed even worse. Because the Packers definitely got some answers to things that they don't necessarily would have thought about prior to the game.
Well, we will see how this plays out. So help us understand, what are the purposes of these code words? Like you just said, Ringo, for example. Like that, it's basically shorthand to let the rest of your offensive line know a protection adjustment, or what are these mostly used for?
It's protection adjustments. It's hot reads. It's, oh, Goff sees that they're doing this. Let's change this to, let's change a sluggo route to just a flat out slant. Everybody has different interpretations of it. For me, it was, all right, over, over, over. That means we're going to flip the play, or flip, flip, flip. And then we'd get to the point where you could dummy it and say, flip, 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 and then you'd run a Fox 2 XY hook, but you'd get those defensive linemen and linebackers. And that's where some of these things, well, this is a check to a run. All right, well, let's run that, put that out there. And Quay Walker's got his coach saying, well, if they say this, they're running to the left. Well, Decker and everybody else could say, well, they think this is happening. So if you fool them once, you can all of a sudden kind of change that narrative. And I'm guessing maybe if I'm Detroit, I come out with a couple of code words that are on that screen early, and I run it, and I fake it, and I do something oppo, because then they'll say, well, they said Johnny. Well, Johnny is supposed to be a screen to the left, but it wasn't. And that can, I'm guessing that's now, but that's a lot of extra work that Jahmyr Gibbs just put on all of his offense and his staff and everybody involved, because he's trying to grab a couple viewers on Instagram Live, which, is it worth it? You tell me. I don't know.
Well, if you start doing that with Badgers information, I think your viewership on your Instagram Lives would skyrocket, just so you know. Speaking of which, we're going to talk a little Badgers coming up next with a special surprise guest, but not until after Tausch tells us, once again, about what Fortrea has going on in terms of its various clinical trials.
Well, we talk a lot about the big fellas. We've had breastfeeding. We've had all kinds of variables when it comes to the studies, and that's the great part about Fortrea. Doesn't always have to be big bodies. It could be, they got studies for everybody. And this one is a healthy, overweight adults, ages 18 to 65. They must think that's our target demo. Body mass index of 30 to 40. Study is 3 stays, totaling 7 nights with 12 follow-ups. $14,148 bucks for your time and participation. If you refer a friend, another $350 per qualified referral. Head over to FortreaClinicalTrials.com. That's Fortrea, F-O-R-T-R-E-A, ClinicalTrials.com.
A surprise guest joins us next to talk Badgers football. Stay tuned. You'll be surprised. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
Minutes. This is the Badgers Outsiders music. But he's not joining us.
I think he entered the transfer portal.
Ready. What are you doing over there?
I wonder who is. Yeah, he hit the portal and probably had a more successful season than we did, unfortunately.
Joining us now to discuss Badgers football, you hear him across the Varsity app on the Badgers radio network alongside Matt LePay, the best in the business. He is former Badgers right tackle, blocked for Ron Dayne. And he gets Tucker Ashcraft, or whatever Ashcraft's first name is, right all the time now. It is Mark Tauscher, radio analyst. Tausch, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Jason. First off, just want to say love your show. I think the whole concept of what you guys do is just fantastic, and I'm glad, I know you talk a lot of Packers, but I'm glad that you're able to jump in and have me on and share some Badger stuff as well. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your kind words. Yeah, it's really difficult dealing with my co-host. He's a real pain in the ass. But we're excited to have you on the show. And
well,
I'm curious.
When I talk to him, he says that the host is a complete neurotic mess most of the time. So it's interesting that you guys see each other that way. That's good.
I can't believe he says that about Jesse Nelson. So I am curious, after the season is now evidently over, how you view what this season turned out to be for the University of Wisconsin, whose 22-year streak of winning records and 22-year bowl eligibility streak is now donezo.
So obviously the season we came into it, and I think from a fan standpoint and, you know, even from an analyst standpoint, I think we thought this was going to be a better football team. There was going to be more talent. You went in the portal, you picked some guys up, and you know, you go get a quarterback, another quarterback, and we would be a better football team, and maybe not necessarily even having a better record, because that home schedule is the best home schedule we've had in quite some time, with Oregon and Penn State and Alabama coming into our place. But the season was inconsistent. I thought even early in the year when we were playing Western Michigan, and I don't even remember who else we played early, South Dakota, there were some things that were a little troubling to me, was some of the run defensive things. We were able to get by and win, and then, you know, figured some things out in the middle of the season, got on that 3-game win streak and kind of thought, okay, now this thing's going to get going. But what was pretty obvious to me was we were lacking in some playmaking ability. We got very small glimpses, but Vinny Anthony emerged and had a really good season. We saw that in the USC game. But when push came to shove, everything was just too hard. And defensively, no takeaways, very limited in the pressure packages. And the last two games, and really even when you put Iowa in there, take the Oregon game out of it, I just continually was sitting there with Matt, and it was the quarterback could pat the ball and just take all day. And those were the trouble points, stopping the run and not having a ton of explosive plays on offense, and then not being able to get a bunch on defense and never being able – we heard Luke Fickell all season talking about complementary football. It just never was there. And the big part of that is big plays are what complement each other. And with the exception of a couple of sun punts that were, you were able to force some turnovers on special teams, it just never happened this year.
I've got lots of questions for you, Tausch, but I'm wondering does Tausch have any questions for Tausch, or are you all good there, Tausch, and I should just keep going with Tausch?
Yeah, no, I have a few, and Tausch, I think one of the things in watching this team, did you think that it was ever, after those three games, did you kind of think things were going to settle in, or where did you see this season really kind of go off the rails?
Ooh, that's a really good question, Tausch. Tausch, how do you answer Tausch's question?
I think, obviously, the Alabama game, what happened at the end of that half and Alabama scoring right before, and then the third and fourth quarter kind of got away. But I think even after that game, I think we had a bye after it. You started thinking, okay, there's some really positive things in moving forward. But then Braden Locke is the quarterback, and just too often this season, Braden made a critical mistake at the wrong time in the Penn State game. You know, you're battling and competing, and you throw that pick, and the game ties, and you're just never able to overcome it. But the rivalry games are what really kind of leave a sour taste. Had it just been, you know, we end up at 6-6 or 7-5, similar to last year, go to a bowl, I don't know if there would have been the total re-look at what we're doing here, which I think we're seeing and we're going to see in the near future. There's going to be, you know, there's a lot of big decisions, roster management with the new era of college football, coaching staff-wise. There's so many things. But the Iowa-Nebraska game, and Minnesota, it was kind of, I don't think anyone had any grand illusions that the only way we were going to win that game, to me, was going to be a grinded out 13-10, something kind of like what Michigan did, just because I think we've, you know, saw this offensively and we were going to struggle. That Iowa game was completely disheartening. And then the Nebraska game, to let that offense do what they did, that to me was the low point in the season.
You know what's weird is that we keep switching to video of you, and I'm very confused. You're in the same place as the host of the show. I'm totally thrown off by that. I'm curious.
You would think that the camera creator would probably do it differently, but I think it's not the easiest job.
Won't you? Yeah. All right. So I got two questions for you. First of all, when you look at Braden Locke, a lot of people are saying that the Badgers are not in this position if Van Dyke doesn't tear his ACL. Do you agree with that assessment, or do you view that as making excuses?
I think it's more excuse making. I mean, obviously, anytime, if you think back during camp, and there I see a picture out at Platteville, it was a dogfight of a competition to win. It wasn't like Van Dyke was light years ahead, and you know that you've got Johnny Unitas, and then you have Braden Locke. Braden Locke was right there, and Braden did some good things. If you look at the game against Nebraska, offensively, we were able to do some good things, but just too many mistakes. And whether Van Dyke would have made those same mistakes, the bottom line is I think one of the things that Luke and his staff really need to look at, and I saw it in analyzing these games, teams didn't respect any mobility out of our quarterback. And our run game, which I thought our O-line got better, I really think what A.J. Blazek and Casey Robach did this year was really, I thought the O-line improved from where we were last year. But they're just crashing DNs and outside linebackers and daring the quarterback to get out on the edge and do some stuff. And we couldn't take that dare. It was too much of 1 and 2 yards because you had 8-man boxes and you had guys crashing down where that was open. And I don't know if Van Dyke would have been more mobile. I don't think so. I don't think that all of a sudden if Van Dyke plays the whole season, we're 10-2. That is just not – that to me is not an accurate assessment of where –
Is the bowl streak still intact, though?
I would say we'd have had a better chance of being 6-6 or 7-5. But, again, I look at the Nebraska game, that was not an offensive failure game. I look at the Iowa game, that was a complete and utter failure on everybody's part. And when you look at Minnesota, you could make the same argument. So do I think we could have maybe snuck out another win? I think the Penn State game maybe would have been different. I don't know. Braden made too many critical mistakes at critical points in the games. So I do think you maybe get to 7 wins, and that's a big maybe with 5 asterisks by it. Because I'm not in that business. I'm not in the prediction business. I'm in the analyst business. And I'm analyzing it, and I'm thinking you maybe get to 6 or 7 points.
All right, Tausch. So what do you think moving forward with this program? From your perspective, what are the biggest things that this team needs?
That's another good really question, Tausch.
I think you really have to figure out what do you want to be on offense? The Phil Longo experiment did not work. And there's plenty of people, Tom Oates, who we respect, has had a lot to say about what has happened. Mm-hmm. You have to find out who this new offensive coordinator is going to be, and then you need to get the personnel to execute it. I don't know if it's going to be air raid. I don't know which road. I would bet that you're going to see more leanage on pro-style type things, what we've been good at, running the football, play action, tight end university. There's a lot of things that I think you have to evaluate. First thing is you have to find out what do you want to be on offense. And then defensively, we need more dogs. I think we need to have more guys that are long levered athletes that run and that can create some havoc, because this defense this year, we were not a havoc wreaking operation. We did not wreak havoc on anybody pretty much all year. We can't go through a season, and I don't know how many turnovers we created, but it wasn't enough. I don't know how much pressure we created on quarterbacks, but I know this, it wasn't enough. So those two things, I think if you're talking about player management and paying guy, all of this stuff that are huge question marks, the two things that I think if you're going to try to be more successful in the coming seasons, you better get better and more athletic and more disruptive on the defensive side of the football, and you have to figure out what do you want to be on offense, because I think offensively we're not as far off as people think. And that's saying we don't necessarily even know what we're going to see at quarterback. But I'm telling you right now, defensively, we need to get more active and be a lot more disruptive than what we saw in this 2024 campaign.
All right, last one for me, Tausch. you know, when Tausch and I talk about different Packers-related matchups, or, you know, occasionally he'll talk about the Badgers, too, these days. But he talks about emptying the bucket, right? You know, they win those three in a row over Purdue, Rutgers, and Northwestern, and then the loss to Penn State, the loss to Iowa. I'll be honest, I went into that Oregon game thinking that they were going to get run out of Camp Randall. And instead, they put up this valiant effort. They come up short. Obviously, the huge play after jump around on 4th and 9 to start the fourth quarter with the Badgers up by a touchdown. Was that, did they empty their bucket and they had nothing left for Nebraska or Minnesota? Because I guess I was hoping that doing that against the number one team in the country, even though you didn't get the W and didn't get to rush the field, was like a waking up moment of, hey, we can play with anybody. We're going to go out and we're going to beat Nebraska and we're going to go beat Minnesota. We're going to be bowl eligible. We're not going to lose these trophy games. I guess I'm curious, was it just their bucket was empty after that, or what do you think happened there?
I do think you expelled a lot in that game, and I think everything kind of built up for that. And then when you lose in that disappointing way, and I think that's one of the things that I think Luke Fickell and his staff have tried to find answers to, bouncing back and handling adversity better. And obviously, great credit to the kids. They competed their tuckuses off in that Oregon game, especially on the defensive side of the football. We're positioned to pull off a big upset and maybe springboard this team into a good finish, and then everybody feels a lot better about the program and where they're at. And I think you just ran out of gas, and then it was really hard to refuel. And when you don't do that and you don't play with that, Wisconsin is always going to be a team that needs to play with maximum energy and effort. And I think when you looked at the Nebraska game, I think frustration overtook, especially on the defensive side of the football, and we haven't been able to bounce back from that. So, it disappointing season, a lot of tough decisions and things ahead for this program, but this is no longer, and I think from the bowl streak ending, which we're all disappointed, I know alumni are disappointed, I know fans are disappointed, I know everybody over there is disappointed.
I heard it didn't matter.
But from the big perspective, no, it did matter. I think it still does matter. But in the grand scheme of things now, you're going to be judged on how many times you can make this college football playoff. That's the new standard of what big boy programs want to be.
Right. That's what the athletic director said.
Now you have to look at this now. It's no longer about a four-year process. Indiana has proven this. It's now a one-year process. You better have guys that you can lean on and count on, and then you better be ready to bring in. The NFL does it with draft and free agency. College, it's everything. Every year is going to stand on its own until they figure out roster management and everything else. This is where we're at. This is the direction of where we're at. So I had a great nugget that came across my desk that I want to share with your guys' great audience before I go.
Which Tausch are you now? Because you're not on the phone anymore. I'm very confused.
Well, that's because your producer hung up on me. So I ended up having to be resourceful. Yeah, you hung up on me. So I had to grab as a great analyst always does, they're prepared.
I appreciate they have you extra jumping in to help cover while we try to get reconnected with Tausch. Yeah, that helped. Thank you.
Yeah, that's how that works. So here's the deal. Yeah, Blacklich gave me his USB cord, and we've seen each other way too much. If you go back since 93, so it's 31 years, in this new projected 12-team playoff, we would have made it 9 times.
9 times.
Is that good enough from our program standpoint that if we're getting, three appearances every decade, is that going to be good enough as Badger fans to make the college football playoff 3 out of 10 years? Because even in our glory era of Wisconsin football, which we would have been in it 2 out of those 3 years, obviously 98-99, what is our expectation level with this new scene? What's our expectation level as Badger fans, realistically, to making this 12-team playoff?
So I don't know the answer to that. Well, I do. I feel like if Mike McCarthy was here, he would tell me that I have a polluted mindset. But again, while I may not be a fan, I do want to see Badger football be successful. Right? I'm an alumnus. I'm not losing sleep over the bowl streak being over. It doesn't matter to me as much as it matters to some of the former players that are on our team, etc. But in this new era of college football and this new Big Ten, where we have absorbed the best teams of the Pac-12, making the college football playoff 3 out of every 10 years, make it 3 times each decade, I think you should be pleased as punch if they're able to do that. Because that strikes me from where I'm standing like it's going to be harder than hell to do. I'm looking at next year's schedule, and it ain't going to be much better, I don't think, unless there is a seismic shift and a major outlay of money to get a bunch of players here that aren't here yet. And so from my perspective, 3 berths in the college football 12-team playoff in a 10-year span would be fabulous. And I know that Chris McIntosh, when he made the change, and look, I saw somebody tweeting yesterday that the beat writers that cover the Badgers have been rooting for Luke Fickell to fail from the very beginning. I don't believe that to be the case. In fact, I think there were people that cover this team that were refreshed by covering Luke Fickell because he was more interesting and more engaging than Paul Christ was, even those of us that are loyalists to Paul Christ. But I don't think they were rooting against him. I think they are calling it like they see it. Now, do I think that there are certain maybe retirees that view it a little differently? Perhaps. But I own my bias. I like Jim Leonard. I said it from the beginning. I wanted to see him get the job because I thought with his NFL experience that he could bridge both the old school Badger football with the new NIL realm and the transfer portal and everything else, because he knows how to make it in the NFL. He played for over a decade. I thought that would have a ton of appeal. That is not the way that the department decided to go. But that is my bias. So if you want to call me out on that, go right ahead, because I wanted Jimmy Leonard to be the head coach, and they chose not to go that direction. Do I think they'd be in a different place? I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but I don't think they'd be any worse off. I would say that. So I don't know what's next for Luke Fickell, but what I don't want to hear anymore, and this is me, not the Badgers analyst, I don't want to hear any more of this, oh, this is all because he inherited a train wreck from Paul Christ. I don't want to hear that anymore. And the reason why is you have another team in your conference that the guy inherited a train wreck. And yes, they got run out of the gym by Ohio State, but Indiana turned things around quickly. Why were they able to do it? And Wisconsin can't. I don't know the answer to that. It's not my area of expertise. But the bottom line is that let's stop blaming Paul Christ too. Let's just acknowledge that everybody's got a hell of a lot of work to do.
I'm not going to lie to you. I love your guys' show, but I would have loved for you to let me go and let you and Tausch get back to finishing instead of ranting to me without asking. No, nobody let the analyst go.
I'm confused now. I don't know who you are anymore.
You've kept the analyst on while you rant, and now I'm sitting here like, am I supposed to chime in on this? Or
no, definitely not.
Can you please just let a guest go? Please.
I'm very curious. If you're in the YouTube comments right now, or if you are by your phone and you can text 844-770-3776, is this brilliant or idiotic? Where do you stand on the guest?
It's both.
I think it might be both.
Tausch, I know we went a little long. Can you go a second segment with us?
No, I can't, actually. I didn't want to go one segment. So.
You need to tell us. Whichever Tausch you are needs to tell us about Coors Light.
Well, Tausch, thanks for your work on the analyst trade this year.
Oh,
that
we
was
are
fantastic.
Still saying goodbye to him. Okay.
Yeah, so we're finally going to let you go, and I'm going to crack open a Coors Light because that was a fantastic segment. Brewed with that three-step cold process, cold lager, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's made to chill. Born in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado in 1978, Coors Light is refreshing. It's crisp. It's only 102 calories. That's why it is Coors Light in my hand when I need a moment to chill. Sub responsibly, Coors Brewing Company. Golden, Colorado.
Unlike your icy cold Coors Light, I feel lukewarm about that segment. More next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com.
Jesse, we're always looking for constructive criticism. How did we feel about the dual role that Tausch played?
Brilliant things that need to become Monday staples from Eric in Green Bay. Box score trivia and Tausch interviews Tausch.
Oh, I don't know about that. I can't. I'm too exhausted to do that.
Some saying we should start having Jason interview Jason to get the best out of Jason with his opinions on the Green Bay Packers.
Now, that's something I'm on board with. 100%.
All right, we're out of time. Thanks for coming along for the ride with us today. We will do it again tomorrow. Have a great day. We're not doing that. Take care. Be good.
Miss any of today's episode of Wildy and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin? Commercial-free full show podcasts are available free on Wisconsin On Demand.